Welcome to Right Through the Roof, the podcast for writers who want to improve their craft. I'm Madeline Diest, and in this show, I'm interviewing writers of all different types and asking, what's that one thing that took your writing to the next level? So come and join me and learn all the proven tips, tricks, and techniques to take your writing right through the roof. Women of Wasps and War, The Sting of Justice, a new historical fantasy novel by Madeline Diest. Women of Wasps and War is a grim and gripping tale of power and politics, love and honour, men and women, the old ways and the new. Women of Wasps and War is now available on Amazon and Kindle Unlimited. Right Through the Roof. I'm Madeline Diest, and today I'm speaking with Alison Morton. Hi, Alison. How's it going?
Hi, Madeline. Very well, thank you.
Excellent. A little introduction about Alison. So Alison is the writer of the award-winning alternative history Roman thriller series, Romanova. She is a Roman history nut. She lives in France, and today she's going to talk to us about her book, Aurelia. Thanks again for sparing the time to talk with me today, Alison.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I always love chatting on, especially if I'm talking about Romanova.
Fantastic. All right, so we were just talking about how it's very warm in France, so you probably don't need too much of a warm-up, but, you know, think of this as some kind of maybe some vocal exercises. I don't know if you're a singer or you've got any acting in your past.
You don't want to hear me sing. You do not want to hear me sing.
That's why you're here to talk about writing. Okay.
Yes.
So a few quick questions to limber up. So the age-old question, are you a plotter or a pantser?
Right. I didn't really know what I was until I'd written a couple of books, which sounds a bit weird, and I heard these weird terms. And I've come to the conclusion gradually I'm a 30% plotter and a 70% pantser. Mm-hmm. I like to know where I'm going to end up, and I sort of keep to the structure of inciting incidents, three sort of big turning points or key decisions or whatever, black moment, climax, and then resolution. So I have that in my head. I sort of got that from the first writer's conference I went to. And that, and then I sit down and write approximately 30 lines-ish, not always 30, but hopefully 20-ish, main things that might happen or people or whatever. And then I start. Sometimes, well, I would say almost always, it never quite turns out exactly like those 30 lines, but it gives me a little something to aim for. New stuff comes along. I mean, I never, ever dream of writing scenes out until I write them. So I think I'm a 30-70.
I've never heard that expression black moment before.
Ah, that's when it, despite all the strivings and the efforts and the decisions and all the action beforehand, it just all falls apart. You know, I'm writing a thriller, you have all these steps to finding out who the bad guys are, all the setbacks, all the events and scenes and the odd fight and confrontations and so on, and discovering what's behind it. And then just when the heroine thinks she's just getting there and her team around her, something horrendous happens that literally cuts it all out from her. And she's in this horrendous position. And I think the reader needs to go before we get to the end of the book. And that's that moment. And I suppose it's just something I picked up from some talk at a conference. And it works it out really well. That's the worst moment. And then it all gathers back up and it all falls into place.
I think I've also heard of it referred to as the all is lost moment.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, okay. It's a cool expression though, black moment. Yeah, I like it.
Oh, that moment.
So do you write every day?
Well, that's a that's a question that is really interesting, because there's writing your book, there's writing articles, there's writing blog posts, there's writing reviews, there's all kinds of thing. I think you need to stretch your writing muscles in different ways on different days, if you will. That sounds a bit poetic.
there's a screen grab for you.
We are writing different ways, different days. Very good. But I think it depends where in the book cycle you are. If you're in the intense writing bit, fine. But if you're marketing your book, you're not going to be writing much on your work in progress. Well, I don't. It's sort of a bit like the sea going in and out. If I'm on a marketing push, I won't write a great deal. If I'm in my writing mode, like I've got to give myself a deadline, I've got 90 days to get the first draft out or whatever, then I am just writing full on. Doing the odd tweet now and again. So to me, it comes in waves, but some kind of writing happens every day, whether it's, you know, a blog post or whatever. So it's a difficult question to answer in a way.
Fantastic. So when you do get to write, what's your writing fuel of choice?
Oh, tea.
Yeah.
Definitely tea. Well, one coffee in the morning, the rest of the day is tea.
Any particular variety?
Well, I'm absolutely terrible in that I import Marks and Spencer's Extra Strong. I really, really miss it from the UK. I really miss it. So every time I go back, I always put a few bags, you know, a box if I can in my suitcase. We can get here in the supermarket Yorkshire tea, which is quite good. That's quite strong too. And Typhoo. My father used to call it Sergeant Major's brew, which is really strong tea.
So I can see you getting on the ferry rather than bringing booze back like most people do when they go on the ferry.
Yeah, well, I live near the Loire Valley, which an awful lot of France's wine is produced there. And we buy it for €2 or €3 a bottle, the average stuff. And it's, goodness knows, £10 in the UK for an average bottle, you know, or £4 or £5, I think. I don't know. I don't buy booze in the UK.
You're back with your car full of tea rather than...
Well, yeah, tea. And I mean, it's really terrible. That's a real guilty secret.
Fantastic. So sounds like we've got to know you a little bit more. So let's start talking about your writing. So
sure.
How do you describe your writing, and what particular themes do you like to explore?
Well, I've always loved two or three sort of genres. I mean, when I did my degree, I had to read sort of more literary stuff, if you like. But my favourite has been books where stuff happens. Thrillers, crime, history, historical fiction, science fiction. And those are the things I like writing, you know. It's an old cliche that you write a book, the sort of book that you want to read. And I couldn't find anything that I wanted to. I thought, this is ridiculous. I saw a really bad film. Well, it was a very beautiful film, but it was terrible. Very bad continuity, and the speech was terrible, and the plot was everywhere. And I thought, I could do better than that. So I sat down, and of course I didn't realise I couldn't do better than that, but... I got my first draft out, and I wanted to explore where a woman led the action, not just as the assistant, the secretary, the hanger-on, the expert scientist or whatever, but who actually was making the stuff happen. I wanted her – I had 6 years in the military, and I wanted her to be an action person, not Lara Croft, but somebody who was thoughtful, who – did balk at problems, who thought things through but still got on with it. I mean, that's true courage, if you like. But also I wanted a Roman flavour, because I'm obsessed. I don't know if I love the Romans, but I'm obsessed by them. And you can't do that in the Roman period, because the women had a completely different social situation. Even though they were quite independent, that would not have happened. So I alternated the history and brought it up to the modern day. Now, this allows me to do all kinds of stuff. So we've got gender roles are reversed. Men aren't disadvantaged, but women are the ones who are the more, they occupy the place that men do in our current societies, if you like, the natural leaders. Mm. So that was quite an interesting gender thing. I wanted to give them more direct approach to life, so that's quite important. You probably gather by now I tend to say it as it is. And I wanted a society that actually stuck to its values, and that's quite important to me. That's not always very popular at the moment, but I think that's something we should all strive towards. And then in each book has its own theme. The very first in the series have things like self-empowerment, the betrayal, how people handle that, breakdown. Aurelia is about quite an upright character who has this lifelong nemesis who wouldn't know the meaning of the word moral or doing the right thing or anything, yet she still has quite deep flaws. So that's quite interesting. And then how you handle the ultimate betrayal and rebellion, and how she cultivates resilience, more resilience than she thought she had. So underneath all the adventure stories, which I think people quite like, there's a very much the human theme, if you like, you know, why we do things, what are our values, and so on, with always seen through a bit of a Roman lens. Seems I've gone on forever about that.
No, not at all. I'm interested in the alternative history as a genre. Mm. So how much, so quite a lot of it obviously based in fact, and you'd be doing a lot of research, but, you know, yeah, you also have that freedom to twist it. So how much is fact, do you reckon, and how much is Alison?
Right. Well, I think I'm firmly of the belief you should know your history before you start alternating it or twisting it, if you like. I research round the, if you like, the jumping off point when the timeline diverged from the real one to the alternative one. So I research what the Roman society was like then, what they did and didn't. But, you know, I had a really good understanding beforehand. So you need to think now, what are these people thinking? How are they thinking? What's their mentality? And to keep that within your alternate history world, even if it's, though it's in the 20th century, 20th and 21st century. So Romans are engineers, technologists. They're very robust, they're very direct, but they have values. But they can be quite, how can I say, direct, and not worry about the consequences sometimes. So we'll keep all that with you. So that's your historical bent, plus structures and ways of doing things and names, and there's an imperatrix and there's a senate, and an update is people's representatives because we're in a modern democracy. You have the vigiles, who are the police in Aurelia's time, as they were the night watchmen of Roman times. So the thing is to make it a modern story, but keep some anchors back to the Roman time. Now, there's various sorts of alternate history. There's the eerily possible, if you like in, I don't know if you know, Robert Harris's Fatherland.
It's actually sitting right here next to me.
Okay.
I haven't opened it yet, but I have it here.
It's a treat.
It's next on my, you know, to yeah, be read pile.
Now, that's one of my inspirations. In it was all such a normal. He's a police inspector, but still in the Nazi world in the mid 1960s, and it's eerily good. You, to him, it's just, you know, that's normal life, and that's what you have to do in an alternate history. Your characters are just living their normal life. They don't go around explaining stuff to each other. You have to gather it as you go along. But the writer has to make sure that the reader does gather it, if you see what I mean. I've read too many alternate histories that expose it. You know, as you know, Fred, blah, blah, blah. And you thought, you can't put that in there. It's like science fiction. That's where one of its roots. And you can't go around explaining stuff. It just has to be there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some of it is Alison. I know what the military stuff's like. I've done that, obviously, so that's not a big problem. I suspect that every single author and they'd be fibbing if they don't admit it. Every single author puts something of themselves in their main character.
Mm.
So I think you've got to be a realist. It's a way we all project. So there is a bit of that. I think when I've given talks, I always call this continuing history in a different way thing. I always say it's like using historical logic. What is the looking at all your knowledge of history, you know, and taking how things have developed, what is the likely development that would have happened if this extra factor of Romanova's existence was there? How would everything else be changed and how would everything else be the same? So you've got to think all that through in a reasonable, logical way.
You must have a serious Bible there with all your facts to keep the universes straight.
Well, I can sort of remember most of it because this idea has been bubbling away in my head for decades. I also use spreadsheets, yeah.
But, yes, there's also spreadsheets.
Oh, I love spreadsheets.
Okay, well, maybe that's the answer to the next question. So, tell me, what is the one thing that's been most helpful in improving your writing? Is it spreadsheets?
No, it's not. Strange. I used spreadsheets before for accounts, so I'm cool with spreadsheets. I know they're very useful. I would say the very sort of the essential thing, if you like, you're talking about sort of techniques and tricks and tips and stuff. I would say collaborating with other people, being around other writers. Now, that sounds a bit fuzzy, but exchanging ideas and sharing and being very accepting. It's not a very specific thing like spreadsheets, but it's being ready to learn, being ready to give as well. But that writing community thing is extremely important. I mean, I dip into various groups, history, science fiction, alternate, indie groups. We all meet up at various events. I was recently at the Roman Festival in York. So that was all Roman writers and Roman reenactors, and it was extremely professional, the museums and stuff. So it's interacting with other people and learning. And I think that's an enduring, this openness and willingness to learn is something a writer really needs, because you can get good ideas, but you learn a lot by interacting with other people.
Absolutely. So are you trying anything new at the moment?
Well, I think this sort of ongoing thing is, well, it is ongoing. That's a very clever way of non-clever way of putting it. I think it's, I mean, we've just done a anthology of Roman short stories. It's being organized by the Historical Writers Association, and of course we all come at Rome from a different angle. I mean, I set mine in AD 395. Others go back to the Roman Republic. And that's a constant learning thing. You know, these are good writers. So you think, oh, that's a really good technique, or, oh, I didn't know that. So it's this openness and collaboration. And I think this is why I'm always very pleased to collaborate with other writers. So I think having that kind of project ahead of yourself, which I've got another one for Christmas coming up, that is the thing that I think gives you strength. Otherwise, it's paying attention to everything, I would say, is the most important thing. The editing, the structure, the using a good team. It is very much a team thing of getting a book out. Even if you're an indie, you need a team around you. I don't know if that completely answers your question.
It doesn't matter. It's interesting anyway. But exactly what your point is. I was just going through some notes from my editor just before we started this interview, and I was just thinking, how valuable that is to have that critiquing, and what a great gift it is.
It's a huge gift, yeah.
For others to help you with your story, because as there's this kind of perception of the writer in the garret, you know, scratching away by themselves. But it is, as you say, it really is a team effort.
And I think that if that's one, that one lesson that it is a team effort and that you do need other people to get a successful book out, that if that's the takeaway, say, from today, great. Yeah, our work is done.
Because I never used to read the author's notes and stuff like that before I was just, you know, seriously into writing. But now, of course, I read them now. But sometimes It absolutely floors me the amount of people that other writers thank in their author's notes. I'm like, my God, how many people had a look at this before it came into my hands? It's like, what, like 30 people? Wow.
Yeah. Well, the tea lady at the end is very, very important.
Of course. You can't forget her. All right. So let's talk a bit about reading. So what writers inspire you?
Oh, anybody that can write well. No, that doesn't. I enjoy topics that are slightly out of the mainstream, like, we were just talking about Robert Harris's alternate history, Fatherland. Mm. That was a revelation to me because I was fascinated by how he'd gone into a different way of looking at something, at an event that is, well, it was apocryphal in my parents' day, the war, if you like. It's always the war. You don't need to say which one. It's that one. Mm. And how he'd gone... taken this forward. I mean, we've had The Man in the High Castle since then, which actually is a bit more fanciful. I think Robert Harris's writing is very succinct, very sharp. He packs an awful lot of information into one sentence. I think that's the journalist in him. And I love that style. So that did inspire me, his style and his content. And another one I really like is William Boyd, who wrote Restless, and he had a dual timeline with two female leads, which again, and it was a very complex thing. It was all about personal betrayal and professional betrayal once during the Second World War and then her granddaughter now. And I like Sebastian Faulks because, again, it's not just a story, although the main story is always gripping. It's about the people. And I think books like those really get me. What else? Lindsay Davis, of course, the great Roman detective writer. She has two people, Falco, and then his adopted daughter, Flavia Albia. And they are Roman detectives within the classical Roman period. And she's a lovely person as well. We've spoken on the same platform. We've met up at conferences. And she has a very dry wit, but again, a very perceptive eye. And I think I like writers that have a cracking story, if you like, but there's much more underneath. I think those are the ones that in the modern inspirations, if you like. I dislike stories. I absolutely detest cliffhangers where the characters walk through the door at the end and that's it. Mm. And you think that's just a way of making you buy the next book.
Cheated.
I hate that.
Cheated.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yes, you can leave it open for another story to come, but a story must be resolved. It must. Currently, I mean, I read all the Roman writers, of course, even the what we call the Bash and Crash boys. And I think any tale that's slightly off or interesting, you know, The Lost Heir or in a period of change. I like reading about change. I also, this is a guilty secret, I absolutely adored Georgette Heyer when I was younger.
That's another book that's sitting here. Georgette Heyer is sitting here.
All the Georgette Heyers, everything. And yes, of course, they're frothy stories about the Regency period, but they do dip into a few grim things occasionally. And I still go to them if I'm ill or tired because she writes so well and her period detail is bang on, absolutely, completely accurate.
How funny is that? I've got about 10 books here and you've just mentioned two of the writers.
Okay, yeah.
All right. Well,
I will read anything if it's interesting, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, well, tell us a little bit more about Aurelia. So what inspired that and Were you trying anything different with that book anyway?
Well, she kept – it's really weird. My first three books, Inceptio, Profiditas and Successio, are spread over a 16-year period. And Aurelia is in all of them, but as an older woman, as the heroine's grandmother. So these are set in the 2000, you know, in the 21st century. And she's obviously a person, you know, of great, not gravitas, that's not the right word, but a great experience. She's very clever. She heads a very powerful Roman noble family. She's a senator. She's an imperial counselor. She was in the military herself in her younger day. But in a funny way, in the first three books, she's very wise, the wise head, if you like. She's very self-contained, and there's some kind of funny little barrier there. And when I was writing the third of these books featuring her granddaughter, Karina, I thought, do you know, Aurelia's very – I fascinated myself with her. This is a bit weird. And she refers back to things that happened when she was younger. And I thought, I have to go back and write her story, of course, don't I? And so I had to go back to the late 60s, which was really, really interesting because I can't remember much. And, yeah, you say if you can remember it, you weren't living it. So you're just glossing over that bit there.
We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. And so – just to get the time right, I go back to when she's a young woman of 28. And then I can develop how she's got to where she was. So in a funny way, it was a prequel. And I was halfway through Aurelia, then I thought, I've got too much story. So I thought, I'm going to have to write another trilogy. So Aurelia, we had Aurelia, and then there's a gap. And then the nemesis comes back in the early 80s. And then Insurrectio and Retalio came out of that. I thought, I have to write the great event of Roma Nova, which is the Great Rebellion. It's scarred everybody. It's a bit like the war that we talked about has gone down not just that generation, but it's affected the next generation. And even my son's generation is aware. Mm. And in Roma Nova's timeline, the Great Rebellion was the thing. So after Aurelia, I then carried on and wrote The Great Rebellion. But Aurelia, the book, introduces her, and it's sort of crimey as well as the thriller, but it's very much part of the Romanova story, if you like. And it was fun going back to a world without mobile phones, without CCTV, without all the spy paraphernalia. Really makes you work hard as an author. But it was lovely to develop her character, you know, the sad moments, the bad moments, the good moments, and to see her with her young daughter, who's, I won't spoil anything, but yeah, to see her with her daughter as a young child as well. That was quite her role as a mother as well, and the pressures on her. So it was quite interesting. So she came out of something, I've got to write this story.
Yeah, that's fascinating me to think of a character and then an older character in writing their early story. No, it sounds like a great jumping off point.
Yeah, and it's also, if you're thinking of reading the Romanova thrillers, you can read the modern ones, starting with Inceptio, which feature Karina and her three other books now because of novella. Or you can start with Aurelia. So there's two sort of jumping off points in the series, with the two different heroines, if you like, even though Aurelia's the older woman, but she's a secondary character in the first three. Mm. But then in the Aurelia strand, if you like, she is her own character and the central person.
So you talked a little bit before about how you'd just been writing a short story for an anthology, but what else are you working on at the moment?
Right. Well, my last book was a series of short stories about Romanova, about eight short stories from across the two millennia. And I've really got into short stories. I've always said, oh, I can't do that. But I did one for a previous anthology and I thought, oh, that's actually not too bad. I was quite surprised. And then I collected eight of them that I'd sort of little things I'd done. And then I wrote a couple more. And I thought, oh, I can get into this. So that was then. But then I really itched to get back to something a little longer. And Aurelia's three books, I thought, do you know, there's a bit of a gap between one and two. I'll do a novella. So I'm doing a novella. And there's a novella in the first strand, if you like. So I thought, oh, yes, do that. So that's 38,000 words at the moment, and that's with my copy editor. It's gone through structural, and it's now with a copy editor. And that's called Nexus, which means – it's got two meanings. In Latin, it means a tie or a bind or an interconnection, and there's a kind of sense of obligation in there, which becomes obvious if you read it. But in English, it means a focal point or a central point, especially in computer terms. So you've got the two senses going together, because all the titles, I've tried to make them comprehensible in English as well, if you're not a Latin speaker, to make them relevant to the book, but also to make them comprehensible in English. So I hope that'll intrigue. That's due out in September. So, and it comes directly after Aurelia. So we shall see.
Fantastic. Well, I might let you get on with finishing Nexus then. Oh, no, it's already with the copy editor, so whatever. Start
it's
plotting,
with the copy editor.
Plotting whatever's so, next.
I've done one round of revisions on it, so hopefully she won't find too much apart from a few aberrant commas. Hopefully.
So I might wrap up now and let you get back to the rest of your day. So if people want to find out more about you and all of your lovely books, where's the best place to find you online?
Well, I'm all over the place. I have a blog, well, it's a website and a blog combined, a blog site if you like, and that's at alison-morton.com. Okay. I'm on Twitter. And that's Alison_Morton. Very confusing. I'm all over Facebook. I keep my personal profile quite personal. So it's photos and France and rants and just general everyday stuff. But I have an author page. That's Alison Morton Author. So those should sort of give people a lead in. Anyway.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Alison. That's been really, really interesting.
Oh, it's been absolutely lovely chatting with you, and thank you very much for the opportunity. It's, you know, great to talk to somebody new about my favourite subject.
Fantastic. Thanks for listening to Right Through the Roof. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe or spread the word by writing a review on your listening platform of choice. And if you'd like to get in contact with me, please go to madelinedst.com or madeline_dst on Twitter, no apostrophes. You can find the show notes for this episode on madelinedst.com under the Right Through the Roof tab. And until next time, what are you going to do to improve your writing this week?